The creature and the stench that permeated it recoiled violently and scrambled back down the crevasse, disappearing into the darkness like a rat scrambling for a hole. The evil could not abide in the approaching light. Darkness and evil cannot exist in the light of God. When my soul's freedom was under assault, these words erupted from the same deep place as when I said, "God forgive me," in my pickup truck. I cried out, "God help me." Six words filled with power. I had stared into the abyss, into the very mouth of hell, nearly caught in its pernicious pursuit of my soul. Now these three lights were increasing in size, coming toward me at a tremendous speed and taking on an awesome form. Someone had heard me, and I had the feeling that this was a search and rescue party coming for me. As the three lights grew closer, they began to take on a brilliant and glorious form. The terror and blackness of the pit was being replaced by wonder and excitement. My heart leapt for joy as three lights became three distinct forms. Take the journey. I am bent over and racked with pain. All day long I walk around filled with grief. A raging fever burns within me, and my health is broken. I'm exhausted and completely crushed. My groans come from an anguished heart. When we are in pain, it engulfs us. When we are in pain, we slide into self-preservation mode. The pain controls us, our families, and everyone's lives revolve around that pain. We live in desperation to stop it. It is as though we are in the dark. We see nothing but the ever-present pain. People in physical pain are in a desperate search for any means of relief. People caught in the pain of life lose vision and therefore are desperate for hope. The psalmist goes on to say, "You know what I long for, Lord, you hear my every sigh. My heart beats wildly, my strength fails, and I am going blind." When we are in pain, we cannot see the future. We only see the sameness of the moment and feel trapped. It was as though the cab of my truck was filling up with water and I was drowning, gasping for air. I was dying, I was alone. But in the darkness of pain there is also silence, and it is in the silence that, if we can listen, we hear the voice of God. The darkness and hopelessness brings an end to our natural ability. Billy Graham once said, "When we come to the end of ourselves, we come to the beginning of God." For in the dark we try to see with natural eyes. We flail against the darkness and hopelessness. We feel as though we are alone in our pain, whether physical or the pain of life. Further reflection. There was a man in the Old Testament, a prophet of God mighty in deeds, defeating and dispatching false prophets in a power encounter on a hilltop. Though he had done mighty things for God, he succumbed to the lies of the enemy and ran away in fear until he came to a cave. The cave was a place of darkness where natural vision had to cease. Now there were earthquakes, winds, and fire. "Lord, is that you?" Elijah said in his raised, quivering voice. But no reply came forth. Then the earthquake was joined by a fire from heaven, like the fire Elijah himself had called down only days before. "Is that you, Lord?" Elijah's voice now raised to a shout. "Is that you?" "Nothing." He put his hands over his ears to shut out the deafening sounds. When the natural and supernatural disturbances were at their peak, when it seemed that it could not get any louder, a sound began to seep through the bluster. It was faint, but as definite as the sound of a single violin playing a high sustained note above the din of a full orchestra. The sound seemed to grow, not louder, but more prominent as it continued. Eventually it was transformed into a breathy whisper that seemed to distract all of Elijah's attention from the storm, so much so that it caused him to stand up, uncover his ears, and step into the mouth of the cave to hear it better. It was as if the storm of his inner turmoil was being engulfed, embraced, in softness. The sound, as it drowned out the storm, was like that sound he had heard 100 mothers utter to their crying babies. It was as though Elijah heard the sound of God's voice gently whispering, "Shhhhhh, Elijah. It will be okay, I am here, I am here." Five. You are not alone. Consider your own journey through life and any areas that seem beyond your control. They may be in a relationship, physical illness, or finances. Perhaps you are in a cave of fear or despair. You have come to the end of your natural vision and ability to see your way through or manage your circumstances or pain, whether physical or emotional. You have come to the end of yourself. You may feel trapped as Jim was or as Elijah who came to a cave on the mountain of God. Yet in this place of darkness, the Lord wants to reveal Himself to you afresh. Let's stop for a moment and take a deep breath. Quiet your heart and mind the best you can. Enter into the cave with Elijah. Are the mighty winds or earthquaking under your feet dislodging you from your securities of life, the things you have always counted on? Maybe these are your natural abilities or talents or material resources. Where do you feel trapped as Jim was? Read Psalm 38:6-8 again. Pause and consider any words or phrases that stand out to you. Are you racked with some kind of pain? Are you grieving over a loss or a relationship or perhaps your health? Have you come to the end of yourself? Take time in the presence of God to allow the tumult and confusion to settle down and listen for the sound of the gentle stilling. SHHHHH, you are not alone. Chapter 4. The Face of Angels. What are people that you should think about them, mere mortals that you should care for them? Yet you made them only a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor. You gave them charge of everything you made, putting all things under their authority. As I watched the three lights converging on my position at tremendous speed, a new concern occurred to me based on my long-acquired piloting instincts. I began to be concerned that they might need to put on some flap to slow down for a safe and proper landing. Just habit, I guess. As the three lights began to take on form, I realized they were more than points of light coming out of the distance. These were not some kind of UFOs. They were angels. I watched in wonder as they came to a soft, perfect touchdown right in front of me. Before me stood three indescribably beautiful creatures. If I could only paint what my mind's eye saw. The creatures displayed brilliant colors beyond the palette of any artist to reproduce. In that moment, I knew that God had heard my plea, God help me. I fell to my knees overwhelmed with awe and gratitude on the soft green grass of heaven. How can I explain these indescribable beings? Earthly words fail me. The three angels glided toward me making no sound of any kind, though their movement created a rippling wake illuminated with a pure light. The angels were not all identical, each one was slightly different from the next. The first angel closest to me was about 10 feet tall. I was taken by the beauty of his face and regal bearing. His features were perfect and his face gleamed with the love of God. The second angel, about 12 feet tall, caused me to open my eyes even wider in awe. He, like the first, was clothed in a simple garment woven more of light than of fabric. Now the other two moved aside and the third and tallest angel stood before me about 15 feet tall. He was dressed somewhat differently than the other two who preceded him. Note that I say he, but their gender was neither distinct nor important. This one was clearly in command, holding a greater authority. These three were magnificent angels, glorious representatives of the light and love of heaven's throne. In that moment, I knew that God had heard my plea, God help me. I fell to my knees overwhelmed with awe and gratitude on the soft green grass of heaven. The heavenly light rippled along the ground under my bent knees, flowing toward and blending with the brilliant light of the three angels before me. While much of their appearance was similar to what we recognize about angels, there were also many facets that I will try to describe. Imagine a face that is neither male nor female, that carries the best of both genders. Faces most incredibly regal and majestic, with very light, brilliant hair and a luminescence of holiness shining from within. The very light of God. They were dressed in the most elegant white robes. I use the color white to describe their faces, hair, and robes, but it was more than a color, it was a fullness of glory that has nothing to do with color. Color is an inadequate term to describe the appearance of these beings wrapped in radiating brilliance. Now the three angels moved and began to glide toward me. I stood to my feet, and instinctively I reached out my hand as if to touch the reality of their presence. As I reached out, the smallest angel came around beside me. Small is a relative term, He was 10 feet tall, as I was marveling at this brilliant and shining being so close to me. He reached back to me, placing his hand on my arm as if to reassure and connect with me. His hand rested lightly but warmly upon my forearm for a moment, and then he spoke without words to my heart, saying, "Fear not, James, we are your constant friends." This was no chance encounter with three angels whose turn came up in the angel rotation that day. I now understood that they had been assigned to me since my birth. The touch of the angel's hand on my arm sent a warm feeling of assurance and comfort through me, body, soul, and spirit. As his arm encircled my shoulders, I felt as though I was being hugged by 50 grandmothers simultaneously with a hint of tapioca. I actually smelled tapioca. It reminded me of the comfort I felt as a small boy coming in the door of my grandparents' house on a cold winter's day to be greeted by my mother and grandmother with that warm, comforting smell of tapioca pudding. It was such a warm and comforting thought that God, in His infinite care and compassion, knew that my first glimpse and experience of heaven would be so overwhelming that He put before me things that I loved as a child to calm my heart. Heaven was beginning to feel more familiar, like home to me. The angels I experienced did not have wings with feathers in the way artists may have portrayed them in a painting. Rather, I saw that they had two spires of golden light coming up from the back of their shoulders that radiated a light, making their heads shine. This created an effect above their heads resembling a halo. What we see as a halo is the radiance of the spires of their wings of golden light creating an arc of gold above their bodies. Perhaps the most astounding aspect of the appearance of all three of these angels was their eyes. They were the deepest violet, a blend of colors describable and indescribable, colors of both heaven and earth. These eyes conveyed a regal calm that was as deep in love and compassion as they were in color, moving me to feel as though I was the only person who had ever been born. And those wondrous eyes never blinked. As his arm encircled my shoulders, I felt as though I was being hugged by 50 grandmothers simultaneously with a hint of tapioca. I actually smelled tapioca. The warrior angel. There was, among the three impressive beings, one who literally stood head and shoulders above the other two. As I mentioned earlier, he stood about 15 feet tall with garments that were slightly different. He was not only larger, but clearly had a commanding presence, more gravitas. His garments were more distinct and regal, and as he moved toward me, the light of his robe rippled like moonlight on water. The other two angels deferred to him, bowing slightly and moving out of the way as he approached. His apparel was subtly different in that his garment was brighter than that of the other two. The hem on the sleeves of his garment was also gold with threads of purple running through it, embroidered with intricate and beautiful detail. Upon his garment and over his shoulder was a sash of gold and a belt of the same color around the middle of the garment. There were a few notable details that set him apart as the one in charge. This one wore a scabbard at his side. I cannot say that I saw a sword in the manner we might expect in the scabbard, but there was what appeared to be an instrument or weapon composed of purest, brightest light. Maybe George Lucas, creator of Star Wars, had an angelic encounter that inspired the lightsaber. The form of the scabbarded weapon was beyond my experience and ability to describe. The best I could offer was that it was a sword of light. He had a medallion around his neck. I later learnt it was called a gorget and was shaped like a crescent moon laid horizontal. This was a piece of battle armor such as warriors would wear in ancient times to protect the throat area. This piece was engraved with letters of some kind from another language I could not decipher, but the markings appeared to shimmer as if alive. This commanding angel had come prepared to do battle with the darkness that had threatened me, and he had won. Perhaps the most astounding aspect of the appearance of all three of these angels was their eyes. They were the deepest violet, a blend of colors describable and indescribable, colors of both heaven and earth. The warrior angel approached me and I felt dwarfed by his physical stature as he looked downward toward me. All at once, to my great astonishment, the angel deferred to by the others now bowed to me, How could this be? I esteem myself as the lowest of a low, a mere lowly man. I was not a holy man of God who had spent 1 minute pursuing him or even giving him the time of day. I cannot accurately portray my feelings at this moment suspended in eternity. This amazing being filled with the light and perfections of God bowed to me. Who am I? I felt quite small by comparison to the immense stature of the warrior angel. Then he began to speak, not as you and I might speak. His mouth did not move, nor was there an audible voice. Rather, there was a communication or thought transference of spirit to spirit. I knew what he was saying as his thoughts entered my own mind. The communication was on a deeper level than earthly, audible words could express. His communication surpassed mere language as if coming from someone who knew me very well. It was not unlike the connection some married couples experience after years of being together who know each other so well that one hears the heart of the other and might even finish their sentences. Some might find that irritating, yet, the spiritual tone of this innate voice was both rhythmic and calming. His thoughts resonated in me. His communication seemed to be formed simply, yet with a kind of Victorian propriety or gentility. With my heart becoming settled in the presence of this heavenly encounter, a question arose from my own heart. I asked the angel, "How could you bow to me, you who live here in this place, in the presence of God?" I cannot accurately portray my feelings at this moment suspended in eternity. This amazing being filled with the light and perfections of God bowed to me. Who am I? What I heard next humbled me beyond description. "James," he said, "man was created by the very breath of God. The light of God's essence is in you. That light becomes tarnished with sin and turning away from God. But the light is still in you and all mankind. When we bow to you, we are honoring the light of God in you." I began to understand that these powerful, majestic beings were in awe of us, of mortal man. The same light that lit up the garden of heaven and that filled the angels was in me. What moved the angel to bow to me was not anything about me, it was the light of God. The host of heaven is in awe of us. We are precious and unique beyond our mortal comprehension. Everything around me in heaven was filled with light, from angels to flowers and even the grass on which I stood. The question, "Who am I?" was being answered in a most unexpected way. I am simply one who God heard crying out for forgiveness and help. I am one for whom God banished the darkness back into the pit of hell. I had not yet seen a small fraction of the wonders I would be shown, each one more amazing than the last. Chapter 5. Walking with Angels. And the city has no need of sun or moon, for the glory of God illuminates the city, and the Lamb is its light. The nations will walk in its light, and the kings of the world will enter the city in all their glory. Its gates will never be closed at the end of day because there is no night there. And all the nations will bring their glory and honor into the city. Nothing evil will be allowed to enter, nor anyone who practices shameful idolatry and dishonesty, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. What is heaven like? Heaven is like the earth, but 10,000 times 10,000 more beautiful and serene. The most grandiose vistas and scenery on earth are only vague hints of the beauty God has prepared for us in paradise. The most unexpected aspect of heaven's landscape was that colors had sound and sounds had color, creating a sensory spectrum that overwhelmed my being with a sense of wonder. Again, the commanding angel bowed to me in a gesture of invitation, saying, "Would you walk with us?" I nodded my head in acceptance. Then the angel turned gracefully and gestured with his arm the direction he wanted me to go. Now, with an angel on either side of me and the tall angel directly behind, they began to usher me into a landscape of unimaginable beauty. I was forgetting the tunnel and the pit that lay behind me and was totally present to those who attended my way. IMAX vision. Heaven is not a globe or sphere, so there is no disappearing horizon in the landscape. Heaven is a continuous panorama expanding to infinity in every direction. Yet I could see features right in front of me with great clarity. It was as if the concept of distance was expelled from heaven and eternity. Heaven exists in a spiritual dimension beyond our terrestrial experience. Things like colors, time, relative size, and distances are finite terms that are not really useful for describing the infinite nature of heaven. As I was walking along the pathway with the angels, there was a great augmentation of my ability to see not only what was before me but also in every direction at once. There was full peripheral vision on all sides, behind, and before without turning my head in any direction. It was more of a panoramic awareness. I am at a loss to explain the level of clarity and awareness in heaven. We see everything here in this life in mostly a surface, two-dimensional perspective. The vision in heaven allowed me to see at greater depth. There was 360 degrees of vision that I can only compare to being in an IMAX theater with no limitation in depth or distance. It was as though I could see the single bloom of a flower on the side of a distant mountain, yet also see those sights directly in front of me at the same time. My eyes became as a microscope and telephoto lens simultaneously. The landscape of heaven. Heaven's landscape was punctuated with recognizable features like the appearance of mountains, trees, flora of all kinds, streams and brooks filled with brilliant blue, crystal water. All of the features of the surrounding landscape were filled with a bedazzling array of colors and sounds beyond any artist's palette or composer's manuscript, all laid out in a multisensory banquet under a brilliant blue yet sunless sky. In my estimation, the blue was a deeper blue than I was used to seeing in the sky. Not darker, deeper. The petals of every flower were translucent, like stained glass. The flowers were pearlescent. Each flower's color merged with the color of the next, one beneath the other. As we walked along, this simple woodland path surrounded with lush green grass appeared before me. Simple may not be the best description, as in fact it was a path of breathtaking, variegated color. There were blooms of flowers of dizzying variety bordering the path on both sides. Trees bedecked with iridescent leaves hung over the surrounding landscape we were walking through. I was on sensory overload and had to pause to take in the scenery with the angels on either side of me. They stopped to allow me to absorb what I was seeing. As I looked down at the flowers along the path, I was confused at first. It looked to me as though the flowers were all one mass of color. But I discovered, as I bent down, that the petals of every flower were translucent, like stained glass. The flowers were pearlescent. Each flower's color merged with the color of the next, one beneath the other. There would be a red flower and beneath it was a yellow flower and then a blue flower and then the green with the stem. The appearance of the flowers reminded me of multifaceted stained glass of every color melded together, providing shades of known and yet indescribable varieties of colors and colors merging with other colors. I stopped to study them a little more closely. One of the angels saw that I was obviously transfixed and overwhelmed by the wonder of the flowers and smiled in delight. As we moved along slowly, the angels pointed out various aspects of this indescribable flora. The flowers not only had color, they had sound as well. Accompanying the visual beauty was a concert of impromptu music created by the petals of the flowers as they were moved by the constant, gentle breeze that filled the landscape. There was a sense that the flowers sang an original and infinitely flowing melody without cadence or conclusion. I said to the guardian, "Is that music?" The tall warrior angel described joy as living on the edge of a huge laugh motivated by a constant awareness of the presence of God. He said, "Yes, James, the flowers and all of heaven are so happy you're here. They are filled with joy. They are singing to you, to me." The tall warrior angel described joy as living on the edge of a huge laugh motivated by a constant awareness of the presence of God. I cannot help but smile thinking about that definition. I experience that feeling even today as I recall my experience in heaven. There were also brooks or small streams of water there about 3 to 4 feet wide. They were not deep. The water was a brilliant blue. The pebbles that lay on the bed of the streams were golden in color. The water was lit from the bed of the stream with light ascending upward as rivulets of light danced on the surface of the stream. The water made sound as well. These streams also composed a spontaneous, tinkling musical offering that accompanied our steps through the landscape. The angel described these streams as the living water of life. I was told that these brooks fed into a larger central river that flowed beneath the sixth gate of joy into the city of heaven. Every stream was connected to every other stream just as we are to one another. The flowers, the breeze, and even the streams all sang together, creating a symphonic concert that resounded throughout heaven's landscape, flowing and cascading to the throne of God. As I continued to examine the flowers, I bent toward them and the most wonderful fragrance came up from them. Like everything else I experienced in the Garden of Heaven, I strained to compare it to what we have on earth. The fragrance could be compared to a memory of being surrounded by sweet-smelling jasmine flowers I experienced in the South Pacific, or perhaps the smell of the incense burned during the Catholic Mass I recall as a small boy. It was sweet and powerful in effect, yet not overpowering. It was the pervasive fragrance of love that permeated everything around me in heaven. It was a scent that filled my senses and flowed along with the breeze. I turned to the angel on my left and I said, "They smell so beautiful." The angel said, "Yes, James, that is the scent of sanctity. Everything in heaven reflects the love and nature of God, from the colors upon colors to the fragrance of the flowers to the constant serenade of music to the startling purity of the streams of water flowing through heaven. The city itself is illuminated by the very presence of God. No sun nor moon nor stars, only the light of God and the Lamb. All things, every sensory input, inspired by and bearing the signature of God. Eternal light of heaven." As a pilot for many years, I was first trained to orient my geographical position by use of the greater and lesser lights in the heavens. To my great surprise, there was no source of natural light in heaven. There was no sun, no moon, no stars or other celestial source. Everything, and I mean everything, was infused and bursting with the light of God. Light comes out of everything, from the grass and the flowers to the angels. Absolutely everything is filled with light and there is no darkness at all. Because light came from everything, there were no shadows. But imagine for a moment looking at scenery and there are no shadows of any kind. Everything in heaven was revealed in a dazzling optical clarity. There is also no shadow of doubt or disbelief, no shadow of shame, no shadow of death. This all-pervading light is like the light of truth that banishes any shadow of falsity. There is no need for shade or shelter from a blazing sun because there is no sun. There is no need to hide from foul weather in heaven. There is no weather. The light felt like the warm and gentle love of God. I can imagine that heaven is rather like the Garden of Eden. Physically, the temperature was like a constant 72 degrees. Everything, and I mean everything, was infused and bursting with the light of God. Light comes out of everything, from the grass and the flowers to the angels. As I have shared this experience here and there, I have been asked, "Well, weren't you allowed a period of rest in heaven?" That would assume that somehow I was weary or tired. The simple answer is that it was not necessary like it is here on earth with all of our cares and worries and physical limitations. I was unaware of any pain or distress or fatigue of any kind. In fact, the only emotion carried to the precincts of heaven is love. To my awareness, my body was more a blend of spirit and flesh, and therefore there was no weariness or physical fatigue, yet I could move as I did in my earthly body. Although I was not weary, there were along the pathway little alcoves or areas where one might pause for a meditative reflection. Nests of quiet focus as a person might do at twilight or the end of a full day. These spaces were softly snuggled in the green and variegated flora and filled with the music of heaven's joyful greeting. Yet there is no end of the day and eternal light in heaven. There is rest in the embrace of heaven's loving light. Enthralled, I gathered in the sights and sounds of heaven's landscape that spread out before and around me in every direction. As we walked along, we came to a large meadow in the midst of heaven's garden. It was bordered by a familiar sight that had been with me on earth for most of my life, a sight that was a delight to me and that made me feel as though heaven and this precinct of paradise was created just for me. There were horses in heaven. Chapter 6. The Sticky Love of God. Long ago the Lord said to Israel, "I have loved you, my people, with an everlasting love. With unfailing love I have drawn you to myself." As I walked along with the angels, bedazzled by heaven's pathway, I became more aware of the love of God with each step. God was so merciful and kind to me, knowing the traumatic experiences that preceded my excursion of heaven's wonders.